Hey everybody, how the heck are you doing? I hope folks are coming out of the holiday moment, however long your holiday moment was, if it was a couple hours, a couple days, shit, all week. Merry Christmas once again, and Happy New Year, and welcome to Season 3, folks. This is the first episode of Season 3 of High Performance Pathways. I cannot believe that we're still ripping it here on this show. But I'm super excited that we are and that we're going to bring a brand new season to you here, kicking it out for 2021. Let's talk about the sponsor. Some things don't change, right? The guests do, sponsor doesn't. Today's show is sponsored by Big Sky Bravery. Big Sky Bravery provides high adrenaline recreational programming to our active duty special operations forces as a means to improve their psychological and emotional well-being. So they take them on these week-long treks, is what Josh McCain calls them, and they recharge America's warriors, and they return them back to the fight for you and for me. So learn more about what they do at bigskybravery.org, or make a trip out to Montana and visit with them. For all new listeners out there, bear with me. Let me share with you the purpose of this show and why we've been ripping it for three seasons. High Performance Pathways is a purpose-built and specially selected collection of someone's experience, as they discuss how they understand, discover, and have been chasing high performance in your life. We collect this content in a one-on-one interview while I'm asking my guests questions, and then we publicize this and we share it with you. Why? Because I believe deep in my heart that every person has a different path to high performance. And hearing about the paths that other folks have journeyed along in their life, it's informative. Hell, it fires me up. It's inspiring. So, during each episode of High Performance Pathways, it's my intent as your host to continue to do five things for you. Number one, I want to connect you to someone else so that in listening to my guest, you might be so inspired to reach out to them professionally and ask them more questions. Number two, I'm going to ask questions in this show so that together we can understand this person's experience. Number three, I'm going to share. Share in an effort to raise your perspective while listening. Number four, I'm going to teach because I have a desire to increase in some way your competence as you walk through life. And number five, I'm going to inspire. Hopefully, together with my guest, inspire you, the listener, to trigger some sort of an aha moment or growth experience that's helpful for you. One additional note to cover here, folks. We have not changed the way we deliver this show. It's raw. It's live. There's no post-production editing. We ask questions, we have a conversation, and we deliver it live to you exactly as it was recorded. Now, my guest today is Dan Kelby. Dan's an Army veteran and MBA candidate at Columbia Business School, majoring in finance, and striving, when he finishes and wraps that up, to step into a career in financial services, following all the time he spent in uniform. Now, I know Dan. I don't know all my guests, but I know Dan. I know Dan professionally because we first met in November of 2019 when Dan applied to, competed for, and was selected by the Commit Foundation's High Performing Veterans Transition Assistance Program. And as part of that service, Dan was partnered with me and I served as his coach. In Dan's own words, he thrives in organizations that are just ambitious and high performing, like he did when he served in our Army's 75th Ranger Regiment and the 101st Airborne Division. And for folks y'all listening that have no kind of insight to the military world, what I can tell you is those are absolutely high-performing organizations within the Army's portfolio. Just go ahead and Google search 75th Ranger Regiment. You know, guys like Pat Tillman are going to pop up among some of the great Americans that serve in that organization. Dan's a problem solver. He's a creative thinker. He is very collaborative and analytical. He loves to lead and he develops top tier teams and talent. And he's pretty financially savvy and fired up about that industry. Therefore, you know, studying that work right now. Before Dan joined the Army, he graduated from the University of South Carolina, not too far from me. Hey, brother, thank you so much, Dan, for checking in with us today and just to share your perspectives with the listeners about some of your, you know, experience in the Army and why you did and what you did there, what you did in special operations and how that was impactful and if it was impactful for you. And then really your transition out. I mean, a ton of my listeners are making decisions, either mid-career or late in their career to grab an MBA. And I think they're all kind of trying to figure out, well, how do I compete well to get into a place like you got into? And I think you've got some perspective to share in and around that. And just in general, man, just your thoughts on this life where you've been ever chasing high performance. So thanks for being here, boss.
Hey, Court. Yeah, no, really appreciate it. It's good to connect. Happy holidays to you and your family as well.
Yeah, man, no doubt. Let's get rolling here with some insight to early developmental experience. And what I mean by that is, what was it like as a kid for you, man? I think our childhood is incredibly impactful. And notice I didn't say positively, because it's not always positive. I've been doing this work long enough to know that. My childhood was very positive, but everyone's isn't. But I'm just curious. This show is not about me. It's about you. Give us some insight, man. Share with the listeners. What was it like growing up in the home? And as you consider that answer, I'm really interested, you know, was sports a part of your life? You know, if it wasn't sports, was there anything that you did outside of what we'll just call the classroom experience? So if you don't mind, man, thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'd say I had a pretty positive growing up, you know, time as well. My parents are both great people. I had a brother and a sister as well. You know, just really, really, really fun growing up outside DC, and spent, you know, all 18 years of my young life here before I went to college, and it was all a great time. And, you know, talking about sports, I would say there probably wasn't too many memories of learning, to be honest with you, but there was a lot of sports, mainly baseball and basketball. Those were probably the two big things I did. And then as I got to high school, ended up having to really pick one and put kind of all my eggs in the baseball basket. So, you know, always competing. I think I probably played, you know, a good 250, 275 days a year baseball throughout, you know, middle school and high school. So sports were probably the most impactful part of my childhood growing up, I would say, for sure.
Yeah, man. Gotta love a baseball player. I was horrendous at baseball. I could tape up my arms, look real good on the bench, and try to be somebody special, but I sucked, man. Let's call it what it is. My brother is great at baseball. My brother, Keith, shout out to my brother, Keith. I loved watching him play and developed a love for the sport by doing that. And my son loves baseball. First year of travel baseball, we just wrapped up. So I definitely identify with 275 days out of the year playing. But he also likes basketball and football. And he's so young at 10. He doesn't have to decide yet. But hey, man, what position did you play? If you would share that a little bit with us. Were you a hitter? Did you love to hit? Did you not love to hit? Right? Where'd you thrive? On the field, or I should say on the diamond. And then also, man, to make this real for us, are your parents still living, boss?
Yeah. So first off, my parents are alive and
share
kicking.
Their names.
Yeah. So my parents, Dave and Teresa, they're alive and kicking. They're, I think my mom's, I think, running some errands right now. My dad's out and about right now working, but yeah, they're great people. They're alive and kicking and hopefully going to be here for a while as well.
How about your brother and sister? Share their names with us too, man.
Yeah, sure. So my sister Jacqueline, she's early 30s. She lives in DC right now. She works for the government. She has a pretty cool job there. She's essentially like a detective, I guess, for the government. And then my little brother's a computer guy named Chris. He's a very technical dude, and he lives in Fairfax, kind of right by where I grew up, actually. So yeah, everyone in the family's doing really well, thriving.
Awesome. Shout out to Dave and Teresa for raising an incredible young man, and for Jacqueline and Chris. And who knows what I'm shouting you out for just being a sibling, right? And I come from a family of five. So that means shout out to the fights, shout out to the conversations, shout out to everything, because everything that you've done has had an impact. And I'm sure Dan being in a family with siblings has also, impacted you. So I just really appreciate given some names to making that family come to life, man. But back to baseball, man. What position did you play?
Yeah, I started off at shortstop. Big hero of mine growing up was Derek Jeter. Never a Yankees fan, but loved Derek Jeter. So kind of fancy myself a shortstop.
Captain.
Yeah, exactly. I fancy myself a shortstop, but then it turns out about the age of 13 or 14 when the pitcher started throwing the ball a little bit harder and they started getting a little movement on it. Turns out that Dan wasn't too good at hitting the ball. So I quickly ended up moving over to pretty much only being a pitcher. And that's what I ended up playing, through middle school and into high school. So mainly a pitcher, but you know, I wish I was a successful shortstop, but I can't say I was.
Hey man, I think my son would say, "Hey dad, I want to be shortstop." And I think every kid wants to play shortstop, right? Man, it's what a fun position, but in a different way, that ain't my boy's position. He catches, he loves to pitch and play some first. We made our way out of the outfield this last year. We're stoked about that. So, hey man, pitching, tough, like mentally, in my opinion, I never pitched, right? But as I've lived through the developmental process of my son, I've seen some of that. And I mean, you got to throw a round ball into a small space at a certain elevation, you know, multiple times to be successful. Was there anything about pitching that just you feel like taught you anything that you've applied to your adult life beyond pitching or after baseball?
Yeah, you know, I think it's funny, you know, when you see a pitcher, you know, they're kind of like they're essentially, you know, the center of the game. But really, I growing up really saw it as like, hey, I'm the focal point of this, and not in the sense that people are paying attention to me, but I'm in control. You know, whatever I do has a direct effect on this game. And that's something that I really enjoyed. And I think kind of the pressure, and you know, I would say I enjoy pressure, but I enjoy, you know, overcoming pressure. So I think just kind of that competition and that, you know, hey, it's just me, like everything falls on me. That was something I think I really enjoyed about pitching, and just the idea of, you know, throwing a ball hard. I don't know why that's such an important thing to young kids, but in my head, I was just like, if, you know, this is the coolest job ever where I just get to sit up here and throw this ball as hard as I can and hopefully good things happen. So yeah, I don't know. It stuck with me, I guess. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. Yeah. I appreciate you sharing those thoughts, man. What I'm hearing from you is that, you know, sport might've been the birthplace and in some way, in part to, you know, you seeking out places, positions, opportunities to be in control. I think one of the things I offer up to a lot of folks is, hey, control the controllables, right? And allow yourself to release things that are just beyond your control. We spend so much energy worrying about shit that we can't control. Right. So for you, maybe this intentionality behind controlling situations maybe began with baseball. I don't know. That's what I'm hearing. You know, your ability to do well under pressure. You were very specific. You said, quote, I don't know that I love pressure, but I learned to exist within it. There's not, aside from maybe the batter, I don't know that there's more pressure, right? Between those two positions on the baseball diamond. And then, you know, I heard a little bit of, you didn't use those words, but just maybe work ethic beginning to evolve also from just your playing days. You talked about Jeter, man, and being someone you aspired to kind of look up to. Any other role models or mentors or men or women that you aspired to be like when you were growing up? If so, who?
Yeah, no, I would say, yeah, Derek Jeter is definitely one, you know, kind of just like, I think just a kid played sports. You always have that, you know, sports hero. And I would say, you know, Derek Jeter is definitely that for me. But in, you know, kind of in my, I guess, like in my personal life, really, my mom and dad were huge factors for me. You know, they both worked full time. They both worked very hard. I had a really comfortable upbringing. It was because they worked so hard. They came from good families, but, you know, they both grew up, I wouldn't say poor, but definitely not well off. And, you know, they just kind of the work ethic that they had and the drive that they had were something that really kind of stuck with me. And, you know, I, as I was kind of thinking about, you know, what I was going to talk about today, I thought of like kind of two quotes that each one of them, you know, kind of bestowed on me as a kid. And one of them actually ties into Derek Jeter too. My mom told me one day, I think I was probably like 12 years old, you know, actually was playing baseball. She said, if you're good, you'll tell people. If you're great, they'll tell you. And I thought that was like a perfect example of somebody like Derek Jeter, right? Just like a humble guy that was unbelievable at the game. And, you know, he never let, you know, his success kind of get to his head. And he was just always a leader and kind of really just out in front of the team and just kind of a role model for, you know, kids like myself, but even I think professional baseball players, you know, the even the guys on his team. And, you know, then my dad, he told me one time I was mowing the lawn and I wasn't making the straightest lines. I was rushing through it. And he came out and I remember he like stopped and I was like, am I about to get a stern talking to mowing the lawn? Like, what's happening? And he looked around and he was like, hey, like, can the neighbors see that Dan's mowing the lawn right now? And I was like, yeah, they can. He's like, okay. And you know, you're going to be done with this, right? I'm like, yep. And he's like, and this is like a task you're completing. And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, so if you mow this lawn and the neighbors see you mow this lawn and you have all these crooked lines, you know, when the neighbors drive by tomorrow, they're going to see something that doesn't look very good. Right. And I was like, yeah. And he's like, okay. So think about that. You know, like if you're going to take the time to do something, make sure you put all your effort into doing it. And I think those two, you know, quotes and kind of lessons are things that I've tried to, you know, really just keep with me and kind of put that into everything I do each day, really.
Incredible, man. So Teresa, freaking shout out in this reflection going back to 12 years old. Hey mom, you matter, right? If you listen to this, and I hope you will, right? Mom, you matter. And this is Teresa, but hey moms that just listen to the show, you freaking matter. And you might not even know what you're saying to your kids, what's going to stick wasn't. You probably say, yeah, no shit, Corp. I wish more stuff stuck. But in this case, if you're good, you will tell people. If you're great, they'll tell you. So if you're out there working right now, right? You're a manager, maybe you're working for somebody. Let that sink in a little bit. If you're good, you'll tell people. If you're great, they'll tell you. What an incredible thought that I just want to share. And Dan, thanks for the gift, man, of giving that to the folks that are listening. And the second one here, I mean, how many dads that are listening can step into this one, right? Yeah, man, son, if you're going to do something, put some effort, and not just some effort, put all your effort into what you're doing, because it matters, right? There's a impressioning, there's an influence of how important it is for, you know, Dave's son, Dan, to understand that effort and hard work is the foundation to high performance. Brother, I interview a lot of people on this show. Some that are valued in certain amounts of money, and maybe for you, given your interest in finance, that's a way that you generate success. And some that are just homemakers and everyone in between. And I ask them, what are one of your habits of high performance? And I'd say 90% of the people are going to say, hey, Cord, I just work real hard. And here's some early thoughts on how important it is to work hard for you in your young adult life. So, hey, man, thanks, brother, for sharing that with us. Let's fast forward here in this conversation. At some point, you made the decision, either while at South Carolina, after South Carolina, hell, I don't even know, but you decided to join the Army. Why, man?
Yeah, no, it was in college. It was my sophomore year of college. I was studying finance. I have a finance undergrad degree, and you know, I really liked finance. It was super interesting to me. You know, the idea like money makes the world go round is something that was just really cool to me. I didn't mention, by the way, when I was mowing the lawn, my dad was going to pay me $20, right? So that was also part of it. So that probably stuck with me too.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, so
it ain't free. You got to work for it. You want to make that money? You better work.
Exactly. So that was probably part of it. So yeah, that one time mowing that lawn might have changed my whole life. Who knows? But yeah, you know, I was learning about finance. I really liked it, and I was like, this is great. But I kind of was like, you know, I'm 19 or 20. I have my whole life ahead of me. And I really, you know, I want some adventure. I think I'm not a huge reader, you know, full disclosure, I can read, but I'm not, you know, a big reader. But I think I was reading some like military books. This was 2009. So, you know, the wars were definitely still kicking then, kind of front and center, I think, in a lot of people. And I just looked at the military and was like, this looks like a lot of fun. You know, I always planned on doing it for a short time. You know, I never saw it as a career, but to be quite honest with you, it was just really a let's, you know, chase some adventure, kind of see where this goes. So yeah, well, I walked into the ROTC building, said, hey, I said, I want to be a Special Forces Ranger. And, you know, as you know, with your background, that in theory exists, but not, you know, not technically. And I literally signed a dotted line because they told me I could. I didn't go to Ranger school for like 4 more years. So long play. they got me on that one for sure.
Those damn recruiters. I love it, man. I think what's really insightful here is a question that I ask a lot of folks. I do a lot of work in coaching people at all different levels through transition experiences, meaning I'm going to make some sort of significant change in my life. And one of the questions that I always ask is, well, what the hell gets you excited? And in some way, your answer here to why I joined the Army was I was just excited about the adventure that existed within that community. And, you know, I guess my next question is, did it deliver? Was the work exciting? I know it didn't keep you forever, but it kept you for a time. But did you feel like you met that need?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I would say, you know, kind of bringing it, you know, back to sports, when you're kind of stateside, it's like practice, basically, you know, you're just practicing and practicing and practicing. And, you know, I was fortunate enough in my Army career to go overseas a couple times and, you know, what I would consider kind of play the game. And, you know, practice was fun, but I had a lot of amazing opportunities, you know, quote unquote, playing the game that I think fulfilled it for sure. I would say 100%, probably, you know, 100% and then some on the filling the adventure and excitement part. There's, you know, a couple little too exciting, you know, events, but overall great time.
Yeah, man. Now, these bullets they're shooting at me, they actually can't hurt. These aren't Nerf guns. To that end, man, is there any memories, you know, maybe top memory, two, shoot, we'll take three if you have them. Any memories that, you know, now no longer in uniform, because that's what I believe to be true, right? You're not still in the reserves or anything, right? You're out, complete transition.
No, yep. I'm just Mr. Calby, yep.
And any memories, man, that stick with you from your time in the Army that you'd be comfortable and willing to share with the listeners?
Yeah, sure. You know, I'll give you three. I think I could cover that probably pretty quick. My first one is, you know, my first deployment, I ended up going to the 101st after kind of doing all my schooling down at Fort Benning, and they pretty much sent me overseas immediately. So, you know, that was one of the exciting moments that I was excited about. My mom was not. But I showed up and pretty quickly after that, after landing, you know, in country, they were like, hey, you're going to go lead a mission. So, you know, I was second lieutenant. I had essentially just like run through the woods with my buddies at Iboluk and Ranger School. I truly didn't have any like legitimate formal training from, you know, the real actual like force. And
what is real quick, let me interrupt. What does Iboluk mean? Like, I know what it means, but for the listener.
Yeah, sure. Sorry. So yeah, so I was an infantry officer when I joined the Army. So I went to infantry officer school is what I believe.
Gotcha.
So yeah, I went there and then Ranger school and then kind of went to the 101st. And yeah, when I was overseas, we woke up real early in the morning and, you know, all my guys were talking about different things. And I was basically shadowing the platoon leader that I was basically going to take over for. He was leaving the country to go to Ranger Regiment, actually. And they essentially put me in charge. And I got in a truck. We were driving to get to the mission. I got in the truck and I realized I don't know how to talk to anybody. I've never been in a military vehicle. I'm technically in charge. We're about to drive in a war zone. I'm in charge of 30 people and I don't know how to do any of this. And I sat there for like 15 minutes. And you know from, you know, your career in the military, there's a bunch of stuff that should have been going on in that 15 minutes before we left that I wasn't doing. And eventually there's this like bang, bang, bang on my door. And I actually didn't even know how to open it. One of the specialists in my vehicle opened the door for me, and it was my platoon sergeant. And he was like, Dan, or sir, I guess is probably what he said, you know, what are you doing? And I remember like, I had two options in that moment. I could have been like, hey, I don't have any idea what's going on. I need you to help me. This is what I do know. Or I could have just brushed it off and been like, oh, sorry, you know, something's going on, and then just kind of play it. I ended up going with the first one, actually. Most humbling moment of my life. And I looked at the guy and I said, hey, you know, I know how to do everything when we get on the ground, I think. I can lead us on the ground, but I have no idea what to do in these vehicles. I've never even been in an Army vehicle. I don't even know how to turn on my radio. And he kind of like laughed a little bit and he said, you know, hey, I'll lead us until we get there. And then when we get there, you know, you kind of take over again. And I was like, that was such a lesson in just like being humble and realizing that, you know, there's going to be times in life where you're put in situations where you're not going to be, you know, really as in control as you want. But just based off the position I was in, I had to do, you know, I was in charge, right? Still at the end of the day, I was in charge. But, you know, Jeremy was his name. He was a great guy, and he really helped me out. So that's probably the most impactful, I'd say, moment of my whole time in my Army career, because I think that really will carry me forward in life, of just realizing that you don't always have the answers, and it's really important to kind of be forthright with people. What's up?
Go ahead. Continue. I want to come back to this before you go on, though. So please continue. Close out.
No, I was just going to say the mission ended up being successful. And I ended up, you know, over the rest of the couple months there, I ended up learning how to use the radio and closing the door. So overall, good to go.
Oh, yeah, you did. I love it, man. Hey, for folks listening, this is like a freaking groundbreaking story on effective leadership, right? Because if you don't know shit about the Army, right, Dan's in charge. He is in charge by way of appointment. He is the manager of the 30 people. He is the commander, right? He's responsible for everything the team does or fails to do. But guess what? He's got no experience, as he just so eloquently shared. He can't even open the damn door, turn the radio on, right? And so what an incredible moment of humility. Because let me tell you what, Jeremy would have known anyway. Real quick, boss, if you fake the funk, right, and try to play off, or, you know, not allow yourself to exist in that humility that you did. And what a great note for us to take out there in the workforce today. You know, you are in charge. Let's just say instead of 30, 300, or let's say it's 3. Hey, who really cares about how many? If you don't know, someone probably does, and it's okay. Right. And I actually think you can be a more effective leader in those moments of humility. Right. And my guess is at some point you and Jeremy might have had a pretty good relationship because of that moment of humility that existed. And he probably enjoyed, you said he laughed, but he probably said, you know what? I got someone I can work with. I've got this young officer here that I know I can make a difference in his life, because those guys, they know, man, as platoon sergeants, you know, how to effectively support and lead their own leaders. So thanks for sharing the story, man. Anything else, man, from memories?
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the things that the military does is you do obviously a lot of physical training and a lot of, I think one of my commanders in the Range Regiment called it a privation exercises, where you're essentially just pushing yourself to the limit. And I remember, you know, doing that over my 6.5 years in the Army of just countless times being like, this is stupid. Like, I'm not having fun. I don't know why we're doing this. You know, nothing's ever going to be this bad. And I would say one of the memories that truly sticks out to me is, you know, something that was way worse than anything I trained for. And it was, you know, it was overseas. I was in, you know, special operations at the time. And it was my platoon and my sister platoon were kind of out on a mission. And we were out there and we ended up, we're in a mountain range, pretty severe mountain range. We walked down this mountain and we did a mission, and it had everything, you know. It had, you know, a lot of, you know, gunfights and miserable walking, and it was cold and it was snowing, I think, at one point, and we walked in a river and it was just awful. And I remember, like, the whole way walking back up being like, this is the worst thing I've ever done. You know, thank God we're leaving. I can't believe this. And looking around too and going like, wow, this is the power of a team. If I was here by myself, there's no way I would be able to mentally be doing any of this. But, you know, kind of looking around and that shared suffering and just seeing that, like, all these guys that I'd spent so much time with in my life were kind of going through it together. And we get to the top of the mountain and we're like, oh, thank God. And the plan was essentially we were going to sleep through into the morning, and then, you know, these helicopters were going to come get us and we're going to fly out. And we ended up staying a little bit longer, and it came to the next night. And I remember all the boys are like, hey, like, what time are we leaving? And I'm like, you know, I'm not getting a lot of answers. Let me figure this out. And my commander was actually out there with us, and we were trying to figure this all out. And I'll never, ever forget. He's sitting there, and his face was just a face of sheer and utter disappointment. He was on the radio, and we're all looking at him like, what's going on? And he looks at me and he goes, we're going back down. And I remember thinking like, oh my God, I just did the worst thing ever. And now I have to do it again. Like, there's no way. And I think it was just really a lesson in kind of like what the human psyche can do, and like, and truly how your body can just outlast your brain, you know, anytime. And it's funny, 'cause we went down, the second night was actually worse. and it felt better walking back up. So that was a really, I mean, we had done it once, right? So the second time I was like, oh, I remember this rock. You know, I remember this little piece of the river. I remember where, you know, X, Y, or Z dropped that thing, or I broke this, or I actually had lost my really, my favorite pair of Oakleys. I looked for them again at night, but we didn't have the time to look anymore for my sunglasses. I don't think they would have stopped the mission for it, but you know, it's just a really, really horrible experience at the time that I look back on and just think, you know, there's no one in the world that can share that experience except for those guys, obviously, that were with me, and just the mental state we were in at the time. It's just something that I just never thought I was ever going to be in. And it was rough. I mean, we all laugh about it now, right? We even got t-shirts made of it, but it was rough. It was very rough.
Yeah, man, I love it. What I'm hearing from you is that, and your developmental experience as a young leader with the Army at combat, there were times when it really sucked. And something inside you just said, got to pull through, and that you leaned on the people around you as well to get that done. So I'm glad you did, man. Shout out. I would love to continue here, my friend, and talk a little bit about the organization that you've already mentioned, the 75th Ranger Regiment, and some of your time there, and really specifically, what inspired you to join? I think very early in the show, you mentioned that you found yourself in your first deployment with 101st on the back of a truck as the person in charge for this 30-man team, and that the person that you took command from was another lieutenant, which for folks listening is kind of the entry-level managerial position in our Army, and they were going to the 75th Ranger Regiment. And I know what that means. It means that person was specially selected, a high performer, because you don't get a chance to do that if you're not doing that. But at some point, you decided to do that. And for folks listening, just give me a second here to share, you know, from the 75th Ranger Regiment's webpage, because I just pulled it up, who these folks are to you. And I'm quoting here from their page. The 75th Ranger Regiment is the Army's premier large-scale special operations force and is made up of some of the most elite soldiers in the world. The Rangers specialize in joint special operations raids and joint forcible entry operations. Being a Ranger is an honor shared by a distinct few. In order to become one, you must pass a series of grueling tests that will push your body and mind to the limit. So, Dan, what inspired you, man, to give a shot at that organization?
You know, I can't think of a specific instance. I do remember, like, on that you know, deployment I mentioned earlier when I was replacing that guy. I remember one night these black helicopters I'd never seen, they flew in and these guys got off and everyone was like, oh, who's that? And, you know, there was all these whispers of who it was. Turns out we were all wrong. It ended up being right, because I didn't learn this till later. You know what I mean? I could have been the boogeyman for all I knew. I didn't know anything. And you know, that I think just kind of seeing that was something that was really cool. And I really just thought, like, oh, I want to get into special operations. That just, like, looks cool. You know, that's something I want to kind of test out. And then when I ended up coming back from that first deployment, we got a new first sergeant. So, you know, I guess the second in command of the company, or probably actually really the guy that's actually in charge of the company, if you really, you know, if you really want to be realistic. But he was from the 75th Range Regiment. He had spent, I think, like 12 or 14 years there. And he was, still is, the coolest dude I've ever met. And I just kind of talked to him about, like, what I, you know, why I joined the Army, what I was looking for. And, you know, he just told me what Ranger Regiment was to him. And he's like, hey, you got to give it a shot. And really, I probably just went off of admiring somebody a ton and just kind of following their direction. You know, I wouldn't say, like, there was too much, you know, great pondering on my end. It was just like, this really cool badass dude I know told me to do it, so I'm gonna go do it. You know, and I was lucky enough to have the opportunity to try out.
I mean, why not, right? Hey man, these people are badass, and you can't just join. You got to be, you know, go through assessment process, which is you got to be put to the test. And then they got to say, yes, we want you. And then you can come in, be part of the team. That's my testament for why the hell I ran towards Special Forces, right? Because they were the coolest thing smoking. Well, and I've been chasing high performance my whole life. So why not? So thanks for sharing that with its authenticity, man. And I think it's absolutely acceptable, right? Whatever it takes to inspire someone to act. And for you, it was just those things that you shared. I want to talk right before we continue, because I want to talk about, you know, your transition out here in a moment. But before we do, I think it's a great time for me just to get a perspective from you on leadership, man. I love featuring military leaders here, especially high-performing ones that come from our most elite organizations. So you can share a perspective with the folks listening on leadership. You've done a lot of it, man, right? So in your own words, boss, and what you've learned from the people you've been around, how would you share a definition, and what does leadership mean to you?
Sure, yeah. You know, I wouldn't say I'm the most eloquent of guys. I think this might even be an Army phrase. So I apologize for this, but you know, purpose, direction, motivation, those are kind of the three words that I would say sum it all up. And what I mean by each is purpose is, you know, people are going to look, if you're in a leadership position, people will look to you for like the why. You know, everyone wants to know why they're doing something. So I think being able to like clearly lay out to somebody why you're doing something and how it's going to benefit either the team, them, or the organization as a whole. Direction is kind of just, you know, giving them the kind of focus really that they need as a member of a team. And then the motivation is just essentially doing it with them. And whether that is actually physically doing it with them or, you know, in the background, kind of advancing them if they don't see it. So, you know, staying late one night to, you know, knock out some extra work that they don't see that's going to help them out or something like that. But really, I think it's just connecting to people and just making sure that whatever team or organization you're a part of is always put first, and you put those people on that team first, and you'll kind of, I think the rest of it will really sort of fall in place.
I love it, man. Incredible simplicity. So coming from Dan, right? Selected to the 75th Ranger Regiment, leader of men and women, freaking lover of finance, right? I mean, there's something there that resonates with you. I guarantee it as a listener here, combat freaking veteran. Leadership is given purpose, direction, and motivation. So if you are leading, and I hope that everyone's saying, of course I'm leading, Court, because if you adopt Dan's definition here, notice it doesn't say anything about a role that you find yourself in. I could be the most junior person working at Food Lion, and I can be a leader if I'm providing purpose, direction, and motivation to folks around me. Or I could be the CEO of Bank of America and provide purpose, direction, and motivation. Hey folks, newsflash, leadership has nothing to do with your title, right? So we're all leaders. So go out and be, go out and lead. Hey man, why did you decide to leave? I think you gave us some insight to that. Leave, meaning leave the Army. You gave us some insight to that, which was, hey Court, from the beginning, I never wanted to kind of settle into this for a multiple year career. But would you share kind of with me, you know, what happened and with complete transparency, you know, I did retire from the Army, but I can tell you there was multiple moments throughout my tenure where I said, I think it might be time for me to leave. So we all, I think, consider, is it the right time for me to leave the Army or the Navy or the Coast Guard or the Marines or whatever as men and women in service? But I'm curious, man, you know, why did you decide to leave? And then what got you so convinced that, you know, pursuing an MBA was the best next step for you?
Yeah, no, you know, I would say really, you know, like I said earlier, I had the plan to always leave. I didn't know when it was. Initially, I would have probably told you I was going to leave at like the 8 or 10 year mark. I would have told you, oh, I'm going to be that Special Forces Ranger officer. You know, I'm going to do all these things. But as time, you know, slowly started to play out, I saw myself really moving less from the action and adventure side and more into the, you know, office project manager type role. And not that there's anything wrong with that, but I just kind of looked at it and was like, you know, I haven't really gotten to live where I want to live. I've given a lot of my personal time to the military. And I think that was all perfect kind of in my 20s. But now, you know, I'm approaching my 30s here, and I just really kind of saw the writing on the wall and was just like, hey, you know, I'm at a really good inflection point here where I can transition from the Army and I can get into the business world. The business world won't have passed me by. I won't be the oldest guy coming into a job. So that was really the big thing. I think probably the most important thing that ever happened to me in the Army was my platoon was supposed to go somewhere when I was a 75th Ranger Regiment. We ended up getting held back essentially just because of some, you know, political things. And my boss made me the rear detachment commander. So essentially everybody that didn't get to go, I was in charge. So I got to kind of be like a company commander light. And I was like, whoa, this is not a job I want. And that was the next job that I was going to be. So I kind of got to kind of peek behind the curtain and was like, ooh, this is not for me. So I think that was probably the most important thing that ever happened to me as I looked to transition. And then, you know, looking to transition, I was like, all right, finance, I know I want to do this. I looked into it and I was like, okay, I want to get into the highest level of finance at the best place I can be. And, you know, there's a lot of great veteran programs out there that a lot of the, financial services companies put on. And I started getting connected to them and I really liked kind of what they were talking to me about. And specifically what I was trying to do in these banks, they were like, hey, man, you know, you just frankly don't have the technical background. And it'd be extremely, extremely difficult to kind of make that transition. And as I looked into it more, I was like, okay, you know, MBA is the route for me. So sort of just put all my eggs in that basket and went full tilt into getting an MBA.
I love it, man. I think what I'm hearing from you is that you absolutely had a vision in your mind of what your best life would look like. And it was no longer in the Army. And you made the decision to leave, and that decision to pursue high level work in the finance field, you needed to get some more education to compete well for those opportunities. So getting your MBA was the best advice you got, and here you are. I would love for you just to share some thoughts, Dan, advice specifically. Is there one, two, maybe three things as you reflect back on your transition that you could share for the veteran that's considering leaving the service right now? What advice, man, could you offer?
Yeah, I would say, first off, you know, they kind of go hand in hand in a way, but do as much research as possible and talk to as many people as you can. And what I mean by that is if you think that something interests you, get on the internet, look it up. And then once you do that, you know, get on LinkedIn, you know, make a LinkedIn, like talk to your friends that are in the business world, or if your parents are in the business world or family friends in the business world, talk to people or just be like, hey, this is what I want to do. Does that exist out there? And really talk to people. And then I think one of the things that you and I talked about, you know, gosh, maybe over a year ago, something that you really put me on to is when you talk to folks, ask them what they actually do. And not in the sense of what their title is, but like, no, at like 10:30 on a Wednesday, what are you actually doing? And on a Saturday morning at 10 a.m., like, are you able to go to your son's baseball game, or are you on call in the office? You know, what does that really look like? I think those are kind of the two things that I probably should have started earlier. But I was lucky enough that it eventually worked out for me. But I got a bunch of buddies right now that are transitioning. They've all landed on their feet, but the ones that I've seen that have really, really, you know, crushed it, I would say, are the guys that started 18, 24 months out, and they just, that's when their transition started, right? And what that entailed was them taking their weekends when they're in the Army or any free time, and they devoted it towards getting out of the Army. That was the biggest thing, kind of, you know, make a plan. I guess that's really what I'm trying to say, is make a plan. Just like in the military, when you make a plan and you have all these timelines and these, you know, gates that you have to hit, you need to do that with your real life, or you can very quickly find yourself probably in a pretty uncomfortable position.
Yeah, I love it, man. Great advice. I tell folks very often transition is a mission. You said, hey, make a plan. I think we're saying the same thing with different words. And if you're in the military and you hear transition is a mission, there's an implied understanding of what does it mean to plan a mission from a military mindset, right? It's some of the things you just talked about. What's the timeline? You know, how are you establishing the milestones to be where you want to be at the end of that timeline? That's how you plan for a mission, right? So great advice. In your case, you made the decision to go to business school. And a lot of people do come out of the military for the same reasons that you just expressed. I'm super curious, man. What advice for the listener do you have who's made the same commitment that you have, which is, I want to go to Wharton. I want to go to UVA. You know, I want to go to Harvard Business School. I want to go to Columbia, right? How do you compete for business school acceptance at a high level, Dan?
Yeah, I would say, you know, I think there's tons of advice out there, but I think there's some really good, there's some really good organizations. So, you know, at the top of the call, you said, you know, how you work with Commit, and that's how we got connected. I think something like Commit, there's another one called Service to Schools that will help strictly with business schools. A lot of these schools have veteran programs. I got some buddies at Columbia that they field phone calls pretty much, you know, all day long or emails from folks that want to learn about the school. So it kind of goes back to the transition piece, you know, do your research. There's tons of things that are out there to help you with it. And it goes back to talk to people. You know, if you don't know somebody that's gone to business school, get in contact with your friends in the Army or in the Navy or whatever that can kind of connect you. Cause there is a slight, you know, veteran path to these schools. It's a tried and true path. And if you kind of follow along the steps that a lot of these organizations or these people at these schools will give you, then it can really, you know, work out in your benefit.
I love it, man. I'm hearing three things from you there specifically. Number one, check out the Commit Foundation. You can do that. Go to commitfoundation.org and check them out. They do high performing veteran transition assistance. I've been working for them for 3 years. I know them well, or just DM me. I'll tell you all about them. The second thing is Service to Schools. Did I hear you right? Do you recall? Can I just Google search that, brother? Or is the website that you remember?
Yeah. So I haven't used them. It's literally service and then the number two. And then I think it's school, and you can just look that up and that would be right there.
Beautiful. Service to the number two school. And then you said, hey man, you know, you've got a lot of friends at Columbia that were veterans, and that every business school has a veteran community. So just ask who that is and talk to those people. So appreciate you offering up those three things, man. And that once you do that, there'll be some folks that'll share some great thoughts about, you know, how to apply, how to do your essays, how to interview well. And shoot, man, just hit up Dan and I'll make sure I share as well his contact information, specifically on LinkedIn, in the notes section of this show. Dan, let's continue, man. And let's talk a little bit in this moment about high performance. And just looking at your resume, your body of work, you're landing at a premier, you know, MBA candidate program at Columbia. You're a high performer, brother, period. So I'm curious, and I love to ask my guests, how do you define that word high performance in your own way?
You know, I would say keeping your eye on the prize, and really, you know, not really worrying about anybody else. I think that everybody has their own, you know, skill sets or backgrounds that are kind of advance them in you know, on their path in life. But I think, you know, really being deliberate about what the next step is and kind of, you know, being forward looking and having a plan. And I think being realistic with yourself, too, is something that actually helps with high performance, because I think sometimes if you get over your skis, that can really put you in a situation where you're kind of at a disadvantage, and it's super difficult to sometimes work out of that if you kind of don't prepare correctly and really, you know, work within your own skill set.
Yeah, man, I love it. High performance coming at you from Dan here includes a couple things in his sharing. Number one, you got to keep your eye on the prize. What I'm hearing in that from Dan is the singular word focus. To perform at a high level, you got to be focused. And where does focus come from? Focus, in my opinion, comes from a deliberate approach to goal setting. Like, this is where I want to go. You know, I want to go to a high performing school to get my MBA. I don't know this to be true, Dan, but my guess is you didn't just have one school on your list. Or maybe you did.
I didn't. I definitely got into the top one on my list, but no, there was definitely other ones for sure.
Right. So that was your focus, right? And it was not just business school, but it was these business schools, right? The second thing, don't worry about what other people say. And I'll tell you, man, this is hard for a lot of people. And let me just tell you something, folks listening. If you can control others, call me, right? Go to CourtWhitman.com and give me a DM, right? Because I want to know, because I ain't been able to figure that shit out my whole life, right? And therefore, let's not worry about what other people think. Let's just be really focused, have our eye on the prize, like Dan said, and drive towards it. I'm not advocating it at the expense of others, but I think what I'm hearing from Dan in this element of high performance is you got to eliminate the noise. Things I say a lot, control the controllables, eliminate the noise. And the third thing that Dan offers up in his definition for high performance is be realistic. And the words I'm hearing from Dan in that is expectation management. It's critical, right? And what does expectation management mean? It means focus, set a goal, eliminate the noise, work towards your goal. And if you miss your goal, evaluate why. And then either reset the goal or make some changes and reattack the goal. So I love it, man. High performance. Keep an eye on the prize. Don't worry about others say and be realistic. Dan, I have got to believe that just like we talked about baseball earlier and the insights you had from pitching about control and pressure and, you know, the insights you had from mom and dad there in your early life, there's something about the Army and the time that you spent there, multiple years, that I'd like to believe continued to impact today your ability to do things at a high level. But I don't want to assume. So I just want to ask, man, is there any habits that you took with you from your time in service that you still have active in your life?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think probably the one that I think serves me best today, especially just really being in kind of a new environment with, you know, in business school slash really trying to get into what I call the real world is, you know, learn from people that are around you and specifically seek out people that are smarter than you. That's one thing that I think really helped me when I got into the Army was just asking a lot of questions to people or of people, and especially people that I saw in like the next thing I wanted. Like, oh, I want to go to that place. What does that guy do? And how'd you get there? What'd you do? What would you not do? What would you do if you're me? What am I not doing that you think I should do? And I'm doing that a lot of that now. And I definitely don't do enough of it, to be honest, because I think there's a ton of insights that you can get from others. And if you're the smartest person in the room, you should probably go to a different room. And then, you know, I'd say another one is just maintaining a schedule. That's just something that has always served me in life. I'm kind of a rigid guy in that sense. But that's made it really, really good for me to kind of have a schedule each day of what general things, you know, that I'm going to be doing. And then the last would just be the physical fitness aspect. I've always been an active guy. Trying to keep up as much as I can. I live in New York City and obviously this is the times of Corona. So sometimes that can be difficult, but you know, I think just getting your body moving, you know, I think it puts your brain in a different state. And that's something that the military definitely, you know, harps on and harped on when I was there was just, you know, maintaining your physical fitness. I think healthy body, healthy mind.
Yeah, man. Love it. Habits of high performance coming from 75th Ranger, 101st Airborne Army veteran, Dan here. Number one, hey, learn from others and specifically seek them out. And seek them out means seek out people that are in the places or positions you aspire to be. Because, I mean, that's kind of the definition of a mentor, right? So have those conversations, get advice, Number two, maintain a schedule. Number three, move your freaking body, right? And you don't need to hear it from me and Dan, but being physically active is absolutely a scientific prerequisite or portion that is value added to your ability to perform at a high level. If you don't believe me, you don't believe Dan, check out the book Spark. All the science is in that thing. Freaking wears me out, puts me to sleep. Couldn't read it all, but I read most of it. All right, man, let's continue here. I want to talk about management, right? Because there you are, no shit, in the truck, going to war, in charge. You know, so you've managed from really day one in some of the most challenging environment that people have, i.e. doing combat operations. So I think you've got some insight into what it takes from a habit perspective, like what do managers do that are foundational to that ability to do it well. And even if you're going to be humble in this moment and say, well, Court, this isn't what I did, but this is what I saw in others that could manage incredibly well. Dan, what habits, man, you know, do you believe are foundational to high performing managers?
Yeah, I mean, I would say humility first off, you know, just kind of being humble with everything that you're doing. And another one is really, you know, listening. So listening to people, you know, to the left and right of you, the people above you, and probably most importantly, the people that you're managing, you know, kind of, you need to keep your ear to the ground and make sure that, you know, understand where they're truly at, where their mindset's really at versus where you perceive it to be. And I think kind of with that is caring about your people and really putting, you know, the team itself above you. And then, you know, within that, you should be able to get them to put the team, you know, above themselves. And really all in all of this goes to just having, you know, an unending desire to succeed. You know, the most important thing, I think, if you're in business or if you're in, you know, war, or if you're in sport, is winning, right? I think that if you do all those things right, you will win. And, you know, winning also isn't always getting first place. Sometimes, you know, things are out of our hands, but as long as we come away learning something, we can get better for the next time. And that gives our chance, you know, gives a better chance for success later.
Love it, man. Habits of incredible high performing managers in Dan's career, things that he does and things that folks around him did really well that were managers. Number one, they're humble. Number two, they listen. Number three, they care. And number four, they have an unending desire to win. Quick story, the word WIN was an acronym in my first company that I landed in the private sector. And the acronym WIN stood for whatever is necessary. And they absolutely believe that shit. I mean, if it's a 90-hour work week, you got to get it done. It was a results-oriented environment, and those are places in which I thrive, which also meant if I get it done in 5 hours, I can go home or hit the gym or go for a long run, right? Whatever is necessary. But I love your call out, Dan, that you added to this, and you said that, you know, winning doesn't always mean getting it done. And I've had to really settle into that. One of my signature strengths is that I'm incredibly competitive. I define being competitive as I love to finish first, and I want and aspire for the teams that I'm a part of to finish first, whether I'm a teammate or whether I'm running the team. And that means I typically wasn't really good at compromise in my life. Well, there's a lot of good that can come from compromise, right? Seek out win-win situations. It doesn't always have to be a loser. How can you both win, right? And there's some great insight to how you do that well. Timeless book by Dale Carnegie, How to Win Friends and Influence People. If you never read it, you need to put it on your reading list. All right, man. Thanks for sharing that, brother. One more question I want to ask. Actually, two, man. And we'll wrap this thing up for you and get you back into your day. I want to talk about teams, right? You've been on some phenomenal teams, sports teams, combat teams. Right now, you're probably at a cohort and as a member of your MBA class. Hey, Dan, you know, I think you got some insight, brother, to what are habits of high-performing teams? So will you share some thoughts on that with us, my friend?
Sure. Yeah. No, I would say, you know, I kind of tie a little bit of this into the last question, but really, you know, shared goals is something I think is really important. And within that shared goals is like having a clear direction for the team. You know, it's everybody needs to know why you're doing it, whatever it is that you're doing, and kind of, you know, how the team will best get there. I think really, you know, the willingness to sacrifice for the betterment of the team. And then I'll end it out with kind of how I ended the last question of, you know, a desire to win, however you define that in the situation that you're in. You know, you should always be striving to win. You might not always win, but if your goal is not to win, then why are you doing something?
Yeah, man. It sounds a lot to me like this word I love called chasing. I love the word chasing, man. Like, I'm not perfect, but I'm chasing perfection. I'm not winning, but I'm chasing being the winner. Just a word that I love, man. I'm hearing a little bit of that from you. You know, you're saying have a desire to win. I'm saying, hey, man, we're chasing the victory, right? We might not get there. Hey, we're chasing being exceptional. I might not always be, but my mindset is that we are. So if that freaking works for y'all, chasing, man, it's a great word. All right. The other three things Dan shared, foundational high-performing teams, they have shared goals, they have a clear direction, and they have a willingness to sacrifice for the betterment of the team. Bam. Well said. With one caveat, and let me just tease this out a little bit, Dan. Shared goals. Can you explain a little bit more what you mean by that?
Yeah, sure. So I think the way that I best saw it, I had a boss when I was out in Washington, and before we were ever going to do anything, he would essentially, we'd go to the whiteboard and he would write out, you know, this is the end state. This is where we're going to be. So you can look at it, you know, think about like a Google Maps. You type in an address. It generally gives you different ways you're going to get there, but you know that you're going to get to that point. That's your destination. And so the shared goals aspect of that would really just be that everybody on the team understands, you know, the destination of how you're getting, of where you're going to go. And then, you know, the best way in which it is that you're going to get to that destination.
Well said, man. I'm so glad I invited you to give some clarity to that, because what I'm hearing from you there is that, there's a shared goals that is manifested in a mission, a vision, and an end state. And for us private sector American folks, like, end state, what the hell are you talking about, right? In my opinion, it's what success looks like for us in this endeavor, the end state. Because what I see a lot in my work is shared goals. And I believe shared goals, not in the way Dan's described it, but in the way that allow me to describe it here, meaning that there's three people that are all working together on a team, and there's just one goal for those three people. Well, if you hit the goal, all three people get a pat on the back. But if you miss the goal, who's really held accountable for the miss? So there's a slippery slope associated with the word choice of shared goals. I think shared goals is an element of underperforming teams, right? In the way that I've described it, meaning that, oh yeah, we got to ship 20 boxes today, and the three of us are responsible for shipping 20 boxes. Well, if 20 boxes get shipped, then the team's doing great. But if 18 get shipped, well, what was the problem? Well, the problem was you didn't each have responsibility for 10 boxes. Yeah, I'm dumbing it down, folks, but I hope I'm dumbing it down for a reason. But what I'm getting at is you absolutely have to have metric-based goals for everyone in your organization for the team collectively to thrive. And Dan, because you mentioned this, you gave me an opportunity to kind of freaking jump on a soapbox about that. So thank you for unpacking it for us and allowing me to do the same in a bit of a different way and with your clarity. Hey, brother, last question, man. What the heck is next for you, brother? 2021 starting this week. So what are you excited about, man, in this upcoming year?
You know, I'd say, you know, keep hanging out with my family and friends. You know, keep learning and hopefully this winter get out and ski a bunch. That's probably the three things really for me.
I love it, man. Spend time with family, more time, spend time with friends, and freaking rip it on the slopes. I love skiing. I'm in North Carolina, so we can't do it a lot, at least not at a high level. But I will tell you that I've been planning a family ski trip for the past 3 years. And this year we're already locked into being snowshoe West Virginia over President's Day weekend in February. And I and my kids could not be more excited. There's just something about, oh man, I just want to ride the lift. Can I just ride the lift and look at the beautiful nature that God has created? The aspen tree, the snow on the ground. I absolutely love it, man. So I'm with you 100% there. Brother, that's a wrap on the show, man. I want to invite you to close it out for us. And the only way we do it here in High Performance Pathways, and that is with the High Performance Breakdown, because that's how we finish. And we finish with energy, right? And we get folks launched into their day. And here's how we do it. I'm going to invite you to give us three claps, followed by the spoken words, boom, shakalaka. And since you're a great soldier, or was a great soldier, right? That's a new word, soldier, soldier. I'll give you a preparatory command, and that's going to be breakdown. And the command of execution will be the number three. So I'll say breakdown on three, one, two, three. And when you hear three, give it to us, brother. Three claps, followed by those spoken words. And anything else in that moment you're moved to share, you certainly can, but nothing's required. You got it?
Yeah, I think so. Hopefully I get this right. It's high pressure.
Yeah, it's a test. I know. You love pressure. Pitch that strike, son.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, man. Closing us out here, boss, on the first episode of season three, High Performance Pathways, my friend, former veteran, great American. Shoot, man, who knows what he'll be doing with his life in D.C. or New York, wherever he lands in the world of finance at some point. Dan Calby, thanks for being with us, man. Breakdown on three, boss. One, two, three.
Boom, shakalaka. Just want to say thanks a ton, Court. Really appreciate it. It's great catching up. And I hope everyone listening to this got something out of it.
Yeah, man, they absolutely did, because that's why the show exists. It's perspectives, man. It's High Performance Pathways. This is Dan's pathway. Might not be yours, but maybe there's a piece of it that you'll walk down given what he shared. So folks listening to connect with Dan, you can find him on LinkedIn at Daniel, D-A-N-I-E-L, Calby. That's spelled C-A-L-B. Now get out there, everyone. Consider what Dare Shan today. Allow it to inspire you and encourage you in your life as you continue to run towards high performance. Chase it. We're all chasing high performance, folks. Now get out there and do it. We'll see you again next week. Later.